Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Ken Shepherd and Dana Lee. Hope everybody's having a great 4th of July week. sorry we missed the show last week. It was just comedy of errors with timing and schedules and things like that. So we're glad to be with everybody today. I'll do the quick disclaimer, and then we'll get started. We'll talk about some stuff that I think everybody will find pretty cool. All right, so this show is intended for the listeners only. All information investment-wise contained in the show has been secured from sources Creative Flips, Inc. and Ken Shepherd believes are reliable, but we make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy of the information. The views, opinions, conclusions, and other information expressed in the show are not the responsibility of Creative Flips, Inc. in any manner. Creative Flips, Inc. accepts no liability for the content of the show or for the consequences of any actions taken on the basis of the information provided in the show. Creative Flips, Inc. and Ken Shepherd recommend that you consult with a financial advisor, attorney, accountant, and any other professional that can help you understand and assess the risks associated with any investment opportunity. Our call-in number today is 347-989-1329. The name of the show is Making Money in Real Estate When You Have No Money. Our website is www.creativeflips.webs.com. Phone number 310-358-7087. That's a 24-hour number. Email fci@pacbell.net. Twitter account @KenShepherd. Facebook account Facebook/KenShepherd and Facebook/CreativeRealEstate or Creative Flips Inc. Sorry. I've been doing this about 30 years. All the shows in the archives are at no cost. You can share them with anybody in the world. We encourage you to do so, and hopefully it helps you make more deals and feed your family and create more jobs in this country. Always use your strengths to fund your weaknesses. Find things that you can do that you're good at, or find a deal that somebody else wants to buy. Sell it to them, make a fee, use the fee to build your equity, things like that. We have $200 to $300 million in process at any one time. We closed $75 million on our terms on our tombstones on our website. We've done much more than that, but that's what's on the website. You can find 150,000 investors for no cost at kenreradio.com. You can also join with us there and become part of our community. We also do a mastermind class. We've been currently holding them on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m., Thursday mornings at 8 a.m. in Los Angeles time. If you're interested in that, write me an email to kenshepherd51@yahoo.com and just put mastermind in the subject line. $20 a session, 20 people maximum in each session, so we can really give some time to helping everybody out. If you're interested in that, let us know. I think that covers all of our initial stuff. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of the show today. So Dan and I have been experiencing some pretty interesting stuff. People have been doing some things that we think are not necessarily the best for their clients, and certainly not necessarily the best for us. So we'll talk a little bit about some different things, but one of the things that I want to talk about first, it's been a few minutes on, is what's going on with oil because of what's happening in Egypt. One of the things that you have to keep in mind is oil is a commodity that drives a lot of other prices on a lot of other things, and including how people spend their money, how much expendable capital they have, what happens with interest rates, because we live in a world economy. So everything that happens that you see on the news affects you and your family. So when you see oil prices going up and people are not buying, let's say, as much gas, then obviously that means one thing. It means there's other things that are affected in the economy. Like here in California, recently, because nobody's driving their cars as much and or they're driving more economical cars, there's less tax being collected for the government. So what did the government do? Instead of reducing costs in Sacramento, they just increased the tax at the pump for those people that are using the gas. So we had our gas go up the other day like 3 cents a gallon. And you wouldn't think that's a lot, but if you think about all the gallons of gas that's pumped in this state, and all the cars that are on the freeways here, it's like a parking lot a lot of the time. and they're just sitting there burning gas, sitting on the freeway. It's you know, it could be very, very expensive for a lot of people. There's a lot of people in business that depend on gas, you know, delivery services and whatever else. And so it's an expense. So everything ties together. So just keep that in mind. I don't want to spend the whole show on that, but I do want to mention that. Dana, you have any comments you want to make on that before we go on to our next subject?
Well, it did raise some things in my mind. It put me in mind of the cigarette tax here in Michigan and other places that I've lived when they transferred so much of the tax on people. They call them sin taxes in Texas. They transferred tax onto the people for their vices, and now fewer people are smoking cigarettes and being more healthy and what have you, and there are fewer vices. And so, you know, that tax base has fallen too. So
right.
They're going to, you know, they have to find the money somewhere, and they
right.
can't just continue to make it up from, you know, whole cloth, as it were, like they've been trying to do lately. So there's more pain coming. It's just you got to be smart, as you know. You got to be smart and look out for yourself and your family.
Absolutely. And so let's talk about a deal we're working on. Let's talk about the guy with that note, that bank we talked about that wants to sell that note.
Okay.
So Dana hooked me up with a guy through her networking and ours who had a connection with a bank, and the bank had a note they wanted to sell. And they do have a note they want to sell. It's very, very low. What's that?
They still got the note. That's right.
They still have the note. The borrower's not making payments. They had to take part of his income from the commercial property to make the payments. He's probably going to miss his tax payment, and that's going to put him about $50,000 down. And that's coming up in September. And it's got very good leverage. In other words, the property's worth like 2.5 times the amount of the note. With the notes, let's say $400,000, the property's $1 million, but I don't remember the numbers, but something
right.
like that. And so they said to us when we were talking to him the other day, well, we don't want to sell the note unless we get close to par. Well, we're not going to pay par for a note no matter what, especially a note that's got problems. So what he said to us as we kept talking was, and I think he got this way because he could see that we knew what we were doing and he was becoming more comfortable with us, which is all part of trust and building relationships.
Sure.
I never talked to the guy before. And he said, well, I really don't want to sell the note for, you know, less than 90 cents on the dollar. I said, well, we're not buying the note for 90 cents on the dollar. It makes no sense because there's not enough room in it to take the chance that you're wrong and the lender's going to turn around and the borrower's going to turn around. He's going to file a bankruptcy and who knows what. So,
right.
So then he said, well, I had an offer at 70 cents on the dollar and we turned it down. So I said, okay. So what we suggested to them was to go back to the higher-ups there at the bank and to say to them, look, we'd like to talk to the borrower and see if we can work out a deal to buy your note at a discount, give part of the discount to the borrower for an incentive to refinance and get out of the note so we can do what's called a backflip, which is sell the note to another investor, at the same time make a spread in the middle and buy the note from the bank. And so, and the other thing I said was, you know, we want a contingency period to decide if we want to buy the note. And I mean, we'll put up an option of a dollar just to hold it, show you evidence of funds, but I'm not going to put up a non-refundable deposit to decide I don't want to buy a note, especially on a note that you've got that's in trouble. And, you know, it's not an option here. This is a direct relationship with the bank, which I prefer much more anyway. Because you're dealing directly with the seller, you're not dealing with some kind of a hammer down situation where you're competing with people around the world that will pay much more than we will. So it gives us a lot more market protection on hedge because we don't have that competition. So so you said, well, we never could take 70 cents on the dollar. And he said, but let me check with my management stuff. So he comes back, I think, in another day and said to Dana, or said to the guy that brought the deal to Dana, look, you know, we'll take 70 to 90 cents on the dollar. That's an interesting statement. But we don't
but
want you
can't
talking.
Talk to, right,
well, you can't
go ahead.
And I'll talk to the borrower. And I said, well, I don't want to buy that note for 70 cents in the dollar if I can't talk to the borrower, because I don't know what the borrower's position is going to be. So we said, we'll give you 50 to 55% of the note, and then we'll resell the note for 70. Now, the reason that might make sense for them is because they don't know who to sell it to at 70. They're not in the business of selling default notes. We are. We're in the business of flipping notes. We know where to go, and we know who to talk to. We don't know everybody, but we have a pretty wide network, and we know how to post things, and we get a lot of response. So I think we could move that note at 70% of its fair market, of its what's owed against the note. And then whoever buys the note has to deal with the owner of the property, and we would have a release to make sure we're not responsible for whatever happens between either of them. And we would just buy it at 50 or 55 for cash and sell it just like you flip a property. When you sell the note subject to acquisition of title by the seller or from the seller. Now, the seller came back and said that they would do 70 to 90 cents in the dollar. Now, if they say they're willing to do 70 to 90, they have the other offer at 70, why didn't they take it?
Right.
Well, I think it's because they didn't have it. Okay, that's number one. So if they
either
say
that
70,
or they learned something in the meantime.
Exactly. Now, it's 70 to 90 means if somebody's asking you to pay 70 to 90, does that mean they'll just take 70? Maybe they'll take 50 or 55. I mean, you have to go back to them. I know you're in the process of doing that right now. And,
sure.
You know, and seeing what they have to say. But it just shows that even when you're dealing with a bank, you know, they play poker with you all day. You know, and they'll say, well, we really want this, but we want, you know, blah, 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 and this and that. And it's going to go back and forth. Now, who do you think is in an advantageous position to wait? Us or the bank?
It would be us.
Sure. We could wait as long as we want because we don't have any liability. The bank has to make a decision at some point or they're going to end up having legal costs in dealing with this guy, which none of which they want. And they are very aware of that because we pointed it out. They really were very responsive to that statement.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows when you're dealing with people and you're dealing with the lenders and when you're dealing with sellers and buyers, you know, you just have to kind of try and think, what's the guy thinking on the other side of the table, and try and work the deal accordingly. So I wanted to comment on that and talk about that a little bit. Dana, do you have any thoughts on that?
I actually learned some more from you yesterday. I was speaking to my mate about it, that you're so non-confrontive. When you say you speak to him like a pastor, you really do. And it's like if someone, you know, it's like some martial artist who is, instead of meeting force with force, receives the force and turns the momentum a different direction. You're so good at that. So, yeah, I learn from you every time I listen. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Well, you know, we had that guy the other day, not to change subjects, but remember we had that other guy the other day that said, you have to sign my NDA, I won't sign your NDA, and blah, 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 this and that. And I could just see that he was combative. So
yes.
I just wrote back to him and said, you know what, we have a certain protocol we follow. Everybody follows the same protocol. We'd like you to follow that protocol, not change it, because if we change it for you, that means we have to change it for others, because there's a term called favored nations. And what favored nations means is everybody gets treated equally. And so if I don't treat everybody on a favored nations basis, somebody else could come back and say, well, you did that for him. Why wouldn't you do that for me? So because word travels, whether it be on the Internet or the networking circles and stuff, I mean, we're known. A lot of people know who we are. And I had a girl the other day actually send me some stuff, and she said, well, I can't tell you anything. And then she writes me, and she says, well, I run one of the Connected Investors meetings for Ross Hamilton. So I wrote her back. I said, well, tell Ross I said hi, and I copied him on the email. I haven't heard from her again. So I guess my point being is that, you know, that belligerence gets you nowhere, you know, and it's true. I mean, we deal with banks all the time. And when we call banks, we say, look, we're really sorry you're in the mess that you're in. We didn't create it. We're trying to help you out of it. But just remember, if you make an offer and it's not accepted, it doesn't mean the end of the world. It just means that they didn't accept your offer. They may or may not get a better offer, and maybe they'll come back to you a month later, 2 months later. You know,
or you can go back to them.
Yeah, or you go back to them. You call them like once a week, say, how are things going? Oh, my God, what a mess. Oh, my God, what a mess. Sooner or later, they start to trust you because they realize you're checking up on it, you know, once every week or so. And then they'll maybe come back to you and say, you know, can we do this? Can we do this? I have a feeling that's going to be what's going to happen with this property. We're going to end up in a series of conversations. And the same thing's true with the one that we bid on the Internet with a proof of funds that we had to provide for $6
million. Sure.
And we bid on that note, and we're given authority by the investor who had the $6 million who wanted to buy the note. And we bid on the note, and we didn't hear back from the seller. So he's the one with the problem. He's the one with the default. He's the one who has to figure it out. So time's on our side. So I think that's important, but I do think it's even more important to always be polite, you know, because it'll never get you anywhere to yell at people and call them names and say, well, this is the other thing. I love when people write me in caps, you know, it's like, you know, why do you write in caps? Why can't you just write, you know? And, you know, there's a certain thing that goes along with sophistication when you're doing this stuff. And if people sense that you're green, they're going to respond to you accordingly. Now, everybody starts somewhere, okay? No matter whether you're 10 or 80, everybody starts somewhere. But it's a matter of how you approach situations. And I think you have to approach life in the same way. You know, say, look, you know, I'm going to go into every day trying to be a good person, trying to take care of people and trying to do the right thing. Now, does that mean it's going to work your way every time? Of course not. But it definitely means that you want to take that kind of position and be respectful. And
right.
to that kind of note also, I was involved in another deal yesterday. And here's what happened with that. Guy calls me up. He says, I need $4 million from my client. He tells me the whole situation. They wanted a very complicated loan against a piece of property that had gotten into trouble and was now supposedly getting back out of trouble. Without going into all the details of the situation, I was talking to this guy, and he says, well, I represent the seller. I said, okay. He happens to be with a very respectable company who I looked up and who I was referred to. So I'm talking to him, and I'm saying, okay, can you answer me a few simple questions? He goes, sure. I said, what's the net worth of the borrower? He goes, let me look it up. That took about 5 minutes for him to go through 88 documents to find out the net worth of the borrower. I said, well, how much cash does the borrower have in the project? He goes, I don't know. I said, oh, okay. Well, what's the FICO middle score of the borrower? I don't know. Do they have any other cross collateral that he can put up on the deal? I don't know. Does he have anybody else that's a third-party guarantor that might be able to help him on the deal? I don't know.
Okay.
Now, why wouldn't a guy who's trying to close a $4 million loan know those things?
Yeah, I would think you'd want to.
Exactly. So I guess my point is that just because somebody has a company and all that kind of stuff doesn't mean anything in terms of the quality of their work. Nothing.
Mm.
It only means that they somehow got themselves into that position and somebody has given them the authority to work on those deals for that company. Doesn't mean they know what they're doing. Frankly, I thought it was pretty lazy. I didn't tell them that. I just said, well, you know, when you have all that information, get back to me, that's fine. He said,
sure.
Okay. You know, now, do I think there are some people that say, look, you know, why are we talking? You're not prepared. Right? I do think there's people like that out there. And do I think that's productive? Absolutely not. I think it's counterproductive. As a matter of fact, I think it probably turns people up. And the other thing is we live in a world of social media. So if you have a situation where you have a confrontation with somebody and you don't handle it with decorum, and all of a sudden they decide that they're going to write something about, watch out for this guy, right? That can happen. And so you have to be very, very considerate of everybody you're dealing with because you never know what's going on. And if you feel like you're walking into a troublesome situation, just get up. like the guy that was just not willing to work with us. He was just entrenched in his only theory. I talked to him. I said 4 or 5 times, can you please follow this protocol? No, you have to follow my protocol. Well, you're coming to me, not the other way around. You want us to help you with your assets, and this is a document we use for 25 years. It doesn't cost you anything. If you're not happy with it, you could show it to your lawyer or something. He said, no, I just don't want to use it. I want you to sign mine. Well, I couldn't sign his because it was just so, it was just not written in any way that I could even make sense of it. And even if I could, I wouldn't sign it because I have to show it to my lawyer, and I'm not in the business of showing my lawyer NDAs and building up a huge legal bill over something I may never buy. So basically, I just, you know, politely said, we're not interested. Then he wrote back saying, well, you told me about, I told you about all these assets, and now you're saying you're not interested. Maybe, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure I could trust you and stuff. And I just wrote back, thanks very much, and, you know, we wish you all the best.
Right.
You know, because it just doesn't make sense to do it any other way. It just really doesn't. And so let's talk about something else. Let's talk a little bit about...
I have a subject, if you don't mind.
Oh, no. Like, go ahead. Anything you want to talk about, sure.
I want to talk about the phone calls that we make. You know, you and I do cold calling, which is very old school. And a colleague of ours did a cold call months ago when we were looking for funding businesses, because that's what we do some of that. And we
do that. What happened with that this week? Where is that at?
Well, we haven't heard back from him on a time. He's trying to get his schedule together for the officers in his fund. But months after the fact, months after the cold call, when this colleague of ours called and told him what we were doing and had the knowledge that she, you know, sounded like she knew what she was talking about, he called back. This is the CEO of a hedge fund, of an investment fund. He calls back and says, hey, we are looking for some money. So the work that you do today yields fruit. It bears fruit ongoing. So don't get tired. Don't give up. Keep planting. Keep kicking out.
Well, that kind of brings up the point of she's really a hard worker. I know who you're talking about. And I know I saw some correspondence where they wanted to know a little bit about what I'm doing. So I sent over all my credentials and stuff. And it would seem like we've already passed all that, or I would have heard something, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that your credentials and all were fine. And I think he's just trying to get schedules together. She's going to follow up with him again.
You should get in touch with her today because, of course, it's a short week. And tomorrow is 4th of July, so I don't think you'll find somebody in the office tomorrow. But
that's probably true.
You know, you might want to have her just send an email out to him today or give him a call or whatever and see if we can set something up for next week, you know, early in the week. Here's another thing I think that's really important. Like when we're talking about these kind of deals, this is a pretty good-sized fund, and I read their background on their website. It's pretty extensive. And so if we get them comfortable with us, and they're now coming to us, this is a hedge fund coming to us. Here's what I just said. This is a hedge fund coming to us to get capital for a deal that they can't figure out how to fund. Okay? So they're coming to us, and we're going to say to them, look, let's see if we can help you with this. But what else can we do with you? Who else do you know? What else are you doing? You know, how can we network with you? How can we get you to join our LinkedIn? How do we join your LinkedIn? How do we build a relationship with you? How do we set it up so that you turn to us every day and you think of us every day when you have things that come up on your desk? Because if little by little you start to move towards closure with somebody, you generally have a much better chance that you'll get something done with them after that.
Agreed.
You know, it's just the way of the world. I mean, I have a deal that I'm closing right now. It's $4 million. And the guy who brought me the deal said, you know, I did another deal with him for $40 million. And now we're doing this one. And now he said, and then I get an email at 3:15 in the morning. Now, he has a young baby, and that's probably why he was up, because he just had a baby a week ago, and he's probably up in the middle of the night with his child. And he writes me an email putting me together with somebody else to work with the same investor that I'm doing my funding on with him.
Awesome.
Now, could he have gone around me and gone directly without me ever knowing about it? Of course. But he didn't, because he knows that I'm not that kind of person, and he knows that it's important to be ethical. He also knows that the investor is a friend of mine, and so the chances are I would find out anyway. But he took the high road. He took the high road and told me about it up front, you know, and made it clear that we're the procuring cause directly to the financing. So when you treat people right, generally, not always, generally it'll come back. And I think most people that I've encountered, both online and offline, are generally good people. I mean, there's always going to be those rough edges. There's always going to be those rough people. But I've sometimes found that the people that you think are the roughest are really the easiest, because they're just used to being bullies. And when you don't fall into their trap and you say, look, you know, let's just figure this out, they get caught off guard. They can't figure out how to react to you. And they end up becoming very, very friendly. And I've done a lot of business with people that have started out being really aggressive and obnoxious. You know, and I say, look, you know, I don't know. And they had something we really wanted to do, and it was very well laid out. And they did sign an NDA, so we got past that. But, you know, they were challenging people. And, you know, you have to learn how to work with challenging people. Now, I can't really teach that to you. I think, you know, there's millions of books on it, and how to work with difficult people and all that kind of stuff. But you have to think about the other person. What are they thinking? And, you know, I was sitting with my wife the other day, and we were talking about this stuff. And we were talking about, why aren't people more responsible? And, you know, they just aren't. You know, if you try and figure out why everybody does all the things that they do, you'll never get anything done. You just have to say, well, that's just the way they are, and you have to do your best to take a deep breath sometimes before you either answer an email or respond to somebody, and go from there. And that's how we kind of conduct everything. So you want to talk just for a minute or two about how you're doing and what your experience has been with? We posted this situation where we have this bank that has a bunch of inventory that they want to sell, and they've asked us to help them sell it. And we are going to buy it directly, but only if it's sold before we buy it. And try to explain that to people is pretty challenging. But when they get it, they go, oh, okay, great. And then, you know, I think we've had like over 100 people respond, and you have like five or so that have really been out of that 100 people that you may think, or maybe there's more that you might be able to work with in the future. Would that be accurate?
I would say so. I'd say that's accurate. Yes, about this process, we have identified so many potential buyers, identified, drilled down and found real buyers in them of all kinds of property, not just the kinds of property we were trying to find buyers for. So that's always gratifying when you know, now I see product that's available, and if I can drill down on the product, I got a buyer for it. And
right.
So it kind of came out of just having done the work to find product and then find buyers for the product. So it's
right.
Kind of like it feeds off itself in a lot of ways.
Gotcha. We just hit 90 seconds on the show. Yeah, it feeds off itself. You're right. I mean, one thing leads to another and to another and to another, and that's how you network and build your base. So hopefully some of these will start to happen for you, and whether it's on those assets or other assets, we could mix and match and build your base. And I know it's helping you really strongly build, you know, a contact base, because you're connecting with a lot of people that you're drilling down that are principals, and hopefully we can do other things with them and stuff like that. So we have about 60 seconds left. So do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you and how they can reach you for the future?
Sure. DealsWithKD@gmail.com. That's DealsWith, K like Ken, D like Dana, @gmail.com. And you can reach my voicemail, 24-hour number, 269-849-9510. Leave a message, and I will return your call as soon as I'm able. Thank you.
And the other thing is that the thing that's also we're discovering is that people are coming back to us that, you know, we've been talking to for a while. So I think it's part of the theme of this particular show is never give up once again. Just keep pushing forward and never give up. So we got about 10 seconds left. We just want to wish everybody a wonderful 4th of July. If you're in the United States, if you're out of the United States, have a great rest of the week. And we look forward to seeing everybody back on the radio. And we're out of time, and we're now non-air, but we are recording. So we'll see everybody back on the radio next Wednesday, 8 o'clock California time. Please continue to follow us in the archives and share our information with everybody you know. And thanks again for listening, and have a great rest of the week.
All right. Bye, Ken.
Bye-bye.